You have arrived at Laughbox, the podcast for the Association of Applied and Therapeutic Humor. We are so excited you're here. Join us for episode 123 with Jim Bob Williams, KDB, and special guest, Roz Ben Moshe, author of The Laughter Effect. Yay!
Welcome to Laughbox, the official podcast of the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor. I'm Jim Bob Williams.
And I'm Katie B.
And we have a very special guest here today. Our guest today is positive well-being expert, Roz Ben Moshe. All right. And calling all the way in from Australia.
Yes.
All right. Now, you're a very special person to me, Roz, because you're one of the first people I met at the AATH conference in San Diego. And you even signed your book.
Oh, that's true. I remember. Thank you for your support back then.
The book is Laughing at Cancer, and I highly recommend this book. I didn't know I would need it at the time.
Yeah.
2 years later, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. How do you make 2020 any 2020-er? I got the diagnosis, and I was wondering, okay, what resources are there? And I looked at my shelf of books and I said, oh, yeah, Roz. And thank you. It's been very helpful in the journey. I'm doing well. I won't keel over during the show, I promise.
I'm so pleased to hear. And I'm delighted that my book might have served some sort of healing potential for you. Thank you for that.
We have a long-lasting tradition of, at least a dozen shows here. But the question is, how did you get involved in the world of therapeutic humor?
It's a great question. It's actually one that I'm often asked because it's not your run-of-the-mill professions, is it? Yeah. I was actually at a bit of a juncture in my life. I'd had a bit of a history. Firstly, I was in the corporate world, and that corporate world didn't really suit me so much. Then I got a diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome, yuppie flu. And I also was diagnosed with food allergies and food intolerances. So I actually start to write food as medicine articles. And I really thought the key to well-being was what we ate. You look after your nutrition and all will be well. But there was something just nagging me, thinking, I'm not so sure. But I kept on writing. I wrote so many recipes that I ended up having a compilation to fill at least one recipe book. And I thought, I'm going to pitch this to some publishers. Now, this was 20 or so years ago. And the recipes that I wrote were largely gluten-free, dairy-free, and vegetarian. And so the publishers came back to me and said, nah, sorry, there's just not enough market value in books like this. And it's so, Jim Bob, really, I could have been here as the queen of gluten-free, but that was not my destination. So it was back to the drawing board. And I thought, okay, let's explore well-being a little bit more. And I decided to go back to study health promotion. And in order to be accepted, because I hadn't had a history of health in my academic area, I needed to do some voluntary work. So I, as luck would have it, there was a World Health Promotion conference in Melbourne, which is where I live. And I volunteered as a rapporteur, basically to go around to each session and take notes and contribute to the daily roundup. And in between all these fabulous sessions, there was a 30-minute laughter yoga session at lunchtime. And I thought, this I have to report on. So along I went with my notebook and my pen, and I was all excited and a little bit in trepidation. And I realized there was no place for a notebook in a laughter yoga session. I went straight under my seat. And I participated in, as I say, this 30-minute session. And the health bounce that I received from this 30 minutes was way superior to anything I'd had in any of advice I'd been given from any specialist or anything that I'd done in the past 5 or more years that I'd had the chronic fatigue syndrome. So I wasn't quite sure what I would do with this newfound experience, but I knew it would somehow be important in my future life. And then I went back to study. I did a postgrad in health promotion and I loved it so much that I ended up going to do a Master of Public Health. And as you can imagine, there's a lot of talk about mental health, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously. But the way that it was approached was talking about stress statistics and anxiety statistics and depression statistics. And in my head, I was thinking, what about this thing called laughter? That really seems like positive mental health and positive well-being. So basically it started with that seed at the conference. I trained as a laughter yoga facilitator. And before I knew it, I was facilitating laughter yoga sessions for community groups and anyone who'd really want me. And I became really good at preaching about laughter being the best medicine. So yeah, I figured it all out now. I can tell people that you need to laugh more for better mental health, for better physical health. And then, as you mentioned earlier, Jim Bob, out of nowhere, I received a colon cancer diagnosis. And that was really when my exploration into the broader laughter effect came into being, because I had to actually practice what I preached. And anyone who has had any form of abdominal surgery, whether for good reasons and a little baby pops out, or for not so great reasons and you have a little tumor cut out, you physically cannot laugh anyway for several weeks. And I was not in the mood for laughter. This was serious. Like, the laughter was just not an appropriate response. But still, this little voice in my head said, don't give up on it. Laughter is going to be part of your healing journey. And so it was interesting, because until that time, I think I'd been focused on laughter yoga being a non-humor based laughter technique, whereas this experience really encouraged me to take a much wider dimension and approach. So absolutely, that's when I got more involved in my sort of intellectual curiosity about the power of humor, also as a stimulus to create laughter, to create positive well-being, to create joy. And that was just little things, reframing the big C into the little C, or just finding funny things that may have just sparked a smile or sparked a connection between me and a nurse or a doctor or a something to change my mood. So that's a very long, roundabout sort of way in which it wasn't a linear, like I woke up one day and I wanted to become a laughter therapist from it.
I am a firm believer in food as medicine, by the way.
Yes.
Why else would we send people to the Mayo Clinic?
Yeah. Sorry. I should have brushed up on my dad jokes and things before I came on. Oh, I'm so disappointed.
Okay, you but snag. I digress. When were you able to laugh again after the surgery?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So physically, I could barely breathe for several weeks. I could smile. I actually had to ban some of my friends who I knew would induce laughter, probably at about week 4 or 5 post-surgery. So for listeners, this was not a pleasant surgery. This was a big one. I had a full bowel resection. I had a temporary ileostomy, which is a sac that you wear on the outside of your stomach. Basically, you process your shit on the outside for a while. Gratefully, the cancer had not spread. And that was why I chose to have a full bowel resection, because even with all of the advances in medical technology, the only way you can assess whether the cancer has spread in a bowel cancer or colon cancer diagnosis is to do a full bowel resection. So gratefully, it all went well, and very gratefully, it was just a temporary ileostomy. The way that I found the pathway back to laughter was definitely a shared one. At the time, I had a husband and 2 kids who were 12 and 15, and I really felt the impetus on me to try and downplay the severity, to downplay the anxiety. So really, probably from about a month, maybe even a little bit earlier, we would make a conscientious effort to sit on the couch as a family and we would all take turns in choosing our favorite sitcom. Seinfeld got a run, IT Crowd, all sorts of crazy, just the, basically a good dose of English humor. And it was really cathartic. It was just brought us back together. It shifted the mood. And while we were laughing together, it was like there was nothing going on. It was just being anchored in that joy and connection.
Tell us about your latest book.
Okay, sure. So basically, so the first book, Laughing at Cancer, was very much memoir, blending memoir and healing guide. And then from that sort of experience, I was involved in research with laughter yoga therapy. We did the first laughter yoga therapy and dialysis, which was then taken to the States, and some of our lovely ARTH members were part of that project in the States. And I also did quite a bit of research in aged care and trained a lot of lifestyle staff on how to use, you know, laughter exercises, simulated laughter, drip fed throughout the day or as consolidated blocks for their residents. And the more that I explored, the more that I realized that there was just so much to say about laughter and humor and joy and positivity. And what I really felt was missing was, in some regards, a prescription. It's just like I was really good at saying laughter is the best medicine. I wore it on like in a superficial way. It wasn't really integrated into my whole persona as much as I thought that it was. And through my experience with the colon cancer, I experimented with lots of different ways in which to orient to a laughter mindset or a joy mindset, positive reframing, gratitude, a superpower. And when you really embody gratitude, you will notice that it will, it's a whole body experience. It's like you can go into that feeling. It's like you find, which is what I did, even in the darkest of moments, you start to orient to a grateful heart, a grateful mindset. You smile from the top of your head to the tip of your toes. And it was really powerful in terms of my own healing. I also experimented with smiling meditations. So even though I couldn't laugh for several weeks, I could always smile. And smiling is a very potent way in which we can elicit our endorphin response. And our endorphins are our body's endogenous internal morphine. They're actually 30 times more powerful. So I realized that through smiling, through gratitude practices, through intentional laughter, I could change the way that I felt. I could actually feel a shift in my physiology. So I had all of this stuff building up and I thought, why keep it to myself? So I had a really good idea at the end of 2019 to pitch this idea to a publisher. And I thought 2020 is going to be my year. It's going to be the year of joy. It's going to be so stimulating for me. Anyway, so I got this book contract. And as we know, 2020 didn't exactly go off with a bang. And I was left to write this book about joy and humor and laughter at one of the most distinctly unfunny times in our collective lives. Melbourne was one of the most lockdown cities in the world. Yep. It was doom. It was gloom. It was depressing. But I had made a commitment, and I'm so grateful that I did, because writing The Laughter Effect really provided so many benefits to me through this challenging time. And as luck would have it, I actually escaped to far north Queensland. And then Melbourne went back into lockdown when I was there, and I just had to stay there for a month. So I was very blessed with feelings that are associated with joy, blue skies, palm trees, beaches. And it was such a gift. It was such a gift. And it really, I think, enabled me to write the book that I had hoped to write in a very positive space, really like a prescription how to do it. It's like you and Katie and people listening to this know that we can't leave these feelings to chance. We can't leave feel-good emotions. We can't leave humor. We can't leave laughter to chance. But that's all very well. How do you do it? How do you, if you're feeling like you've had a shit day, if you've been just diagnosed with a cancer or you've just been fired from your job or your kid's stressing you out, like how do you actually access these things and why would you want to? So the book has actually got a lot of research as to why. Why? It's not, this is nothing new that I'm talking about. And also I'm standing on huge shoulders of other people, especially AATH members who've explored this before. But communities since day dot, Indigenous, biblical, Eastern, Western, they have drawn on humor and laughter to connect and heal. It's part of who we are. We just forget. And we park it as associated. It's like we can only feel that way when everything in our world is going well. If there's one thing that COVID showed us is that shit happens, right? Can't control the shit that happens, but we can control how we respond with levity, with humor, or with woe and doom and gloom, which can be the easier choice many times.
I love the subtitle of the book, How to Build Joy, Positivity, and Resilience in Your Life. Yeah, because it's describing it as something that we build, we contribute to in the process of achieving it. It's not something that we take out of a box. It's not something that we download. That frames the mindset of how to use laughter.
That's exactly right. So I always say that positivity is a doing word. It's a verb. We have to do positivity. We can't think positivity. We have to do something in order to become positive, because that's what changes our brain. That's what changes our neural pathways. That's what develops them. And we can either develop neural pathways towards negativity, which is definitely the easier choice because we have an inbuilt negativity bias in our brain, or we can build things into our day that grow. Whatever we practice, we get good at. Our habits become our habitat. That's something that I learned from someone at the AATH conference. So it is something that we just can't get complacent about. We can't just think, okay, yeah, I've done the laughter, I've done the humor, I've done the joy, I've done enough. It's going to last me for the rest of my life. It's just not how it works.
Hey, do you have some questions?
I do. I'm going to start with your bio. You have pretty much talked about this already, but laughter is no laughing matter. I'm a laughter yogi. I just started last week teaching joyful yoga, which is Kundalini, Hatha, and laughter combined. And it's proving to be quite fun. You've talked about what you've been through. And so clearly laughing is no laughing matter. But do you want to say more about that?
I can. I think the way that I've approached this is that humor and laughter tend to be not taken seriously. When I first brought out the Laughing at Cancer book, in Australia, it's a bit more conservative than the States. But when I went to speak to medical departments, it was like, what? No, sorry, forget it. So I want laughter to be taken seriously because I've looked into the research and some of the outcomes that you have from humor and non-humor based laughter interventions more potent than any medical pharmaceutical alternative. So I decided that one of my chapters was going to be laughter, the best medicine. There was not going to be a question mark in that. And I recount lots of different research. And one of the studies that was a meta-analysis, so they take a lot of research studies, they actually found that for people with irritable bowel syndrome, laughter yoga, simulated laughter exercises, was more impactful than the pharmaceutical equivalent that people had been given in studies. The same was said about some of the studies into anxiety, that particularly non-humor-based laughter, like laughter yoga, was more effective than humor-based studies than antidepressants. And as I say, there are the research studies that I've recounted in my book. And you might wonder why there's even a difference between the humor-based studies and the non-humor-based studies. And it really comes down to when in simulated laughter, like laughter yoga, where, ha, and you're clapping and deep breathing, you can control the amount of laughter that is being dosed. So for a fact that if you have got a 30-minute laughter yoga session, you have 10 laughs, for example, each laugh goes for 1 to 2 minutes, you have got, you know, 20 minutes, maybe 15 of laughter. As opposed to a humor-based study where you are relying on the subjective nature of humor for someone to find something funny, to laugh on the outside. Often, with the exception of Jim Bob's jokes that I always laugh out loud to, often we laugh on the inside. Often we're smiling. We find something amusing, but we don't laugh out loud. Laughter, it's simulated laughter yoga, and that's the main form of non-humor-based laughter therapies, is really something that deserves to be taken seriously. And it's really changing lives around the globe.
It's true.
Don't go away. We're just stopping for a station break. Stay with us. Have a giggle. And we'll be right back.
Are you tired of the same lame speakers coming to your organization and making people fall asleep over coffee? What you need is a presentation on therapeutic humor. And Katie B and I just happen to know two excellent presenters. You could have Katie B. You could have Jim Bob. You could have us both. And we'll talk to your organization about the application of humor and how to make your life better. And that's going to be a whole lot better than watching people fall asleep in their coffee. So take down this number. 7. Just wanted you to have it. And then take down this number, 304-610-7970. Call us today. Operators are standing by. Some of them are standing on their heads.
And now, back to our Laugh Box podcast.
Can you touch on, some people think laughter yoga and focusing on laughter and using laughter as medicine is toxic. Have you had these conversations before? Let's dispel toxic positivity for a moment here with these modalities.
Sure. It's a great question, Katie. And yes, it's either something that people have directly said to me, or you just see the eyes rolling and that says it all. So it comes back to what I said earlier, that positive is actually one of the most negative connotations in the English language, because it's people going through a tough time. It's like the last thing that you want to hear is just be positive, or I try and be positive. That can lead to this idea of toxic insincerity. So it's, if you think something but you don't do something, it doesn't change anything. So there's this pressure that builds. It's, I'm thinking, I'm trying to be positive, but nothing's happening. So it's about, positivity is about acknowledging that we all go through negative and challenging times. However, there is much we can do to shift the scales, to acknowledge that, yeah, sure, there's a challenge, but how much energy are we going to invest in that? And what happens physiologically to ourselves when we do? When we invest in negative thought patterns, or everything that goes wrong in our world, or recounting a stressful situation, that stimulates our stress hormones. Now, it doesn't matter whether that event happened yesterday, a year ago, or 10 years ago. When you are visualizing and thinking about and connecting to that thing, that negative or challenging time, you're stimulating your stress hormones. So when it comes to suggesting how we can do this differently, it's not by saying, oh, it was nothing, like just ignore it. That's where the toxic insincerity comes in. It's about saying, okay, I acknowledge this is a challenging time, but maybe there's something that I can be grateful for about that time in this present moment. And the extraordinary thing about the mind is that it will believe anything, past, present, or future. If you're struggling with being able to recount something that you can be grateful for about that event in the present moment, you can actually invite yourself to future. Think about what you might be grateful about this particular challenging event in the future. There are just many things that we can do in which we can actually shift the way that we feel. We can actually direct how our thoughts go. And, you know, and I talk about it in my book, in one of the chapters I call Self-Compassion with a Smile. We can do all these sorts of things, but if we've still got that inner critic saying, you suck, you always mess up, don't bother buying any book. Get yourself an email book. It's not going to change. We really have to do that inner work. And it comes back to, I recount a legend about what wolf we feed, the wolf of negativity or the wolf of positivity. And there's just so much. It's a real bummer, actually, because we actually have to take responsibility for our actions, for our thoughts. But it's really heartening, I think, to know that just like even placing a heartfelt smile on your face, even choosing to laugh out loud to some corny jokes like that, it changes our physiology. In that second, it just creates a little bit of space, a little bit of distance from that stress that you have been focusing on. And that's where the magic lies.
Thank you. That's beautiful. Yeah. And one of the things I try and tell people too is you can't have cortisol and your good endorphins at the same time. So the minute you start working on your good endorphins, your cortisol is going down. And just that is a reason to try and work towards positivity.
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. And actually, you're going to double my business now, because when I do a stand-up routine, if it fails, I'll just charge them for a non-laughter-based intervention. And, you know. But I digress. So how did you get into the business of doing workshops? What did it take from the time that, yes, I want to help people, to what was the journey from that moment to the journey of saying, hey, I'm going to approach a hospital, I'm going to approach a business and say, let me help you with your wellness program. Let me show you something.
I suppose pretty early on, I realized this wasn't just a hobby that I was just going to keep to myself. This wasn't a matter of going and doing a sculpture course. These were newfound skills that I just, from the moment that I practiced them, they were transformative. And it was interesting. The first actual laughter yoga program that I facilitated was for a community health group. And I thought that's a good way to get started. Nothing too serious. And I ended up turning up to this old church hall. It was in the evening. And 70-plus-year-old people were sitting there. And I thought, oh, I was expecting more people. I was expecting a bit more life in the room. And boy, was I mistaken. Because what I realized almost instantaneously is as soon as we started laughing together and breathing together, there was such an incredible shift that I didn't even notice their gray hair afterwards. So the laughter was this sort of portal into their younger years, into their sense of play, into that joy. And honestly, after that initial workshop, essentially, I think they bounced out of the room with such joy that I suppose it really showed me very early on that this was something that I had to, that I wanted to experiment with more and more. And I was very fortunate that I could do that. And I was very fortunate that I was at the time lecturing at my university, at La Trobe University in Melbourne, and an academic came along who was specializing in geriatrics. And that's how my first laugh out loud aged care pro started, because she said, oh, this just sounds amazing. I'd love to, can we work together? And you know how it is. It's when you're in flow, things just happen. And it just took on a life of its own. I never, ever dreamed that I would be able to have a serious career in laughter. But hey, that's what's happened. And last year, I'm thrilled to announce that my university supported an online laughter resilience and being short course for professionals, which was huge. It was huge. And we had people from all around the globe who attended. And it's wow, like how amazing is that a university will take that risk? And they were taking laughter seriously. And I commend them for that. And that's what I want to see more of. That's what I want to build more of. So the more that I talk to people, the more that I write books and people read some of the ways in which we can do this stuff, the more we can actually create a shift in humanity, just a tiny bit, just a little bit. And boy, couldn't humanity do with it now.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Very much. Roz, I want to say thanks for being alive today.
Oh, bless. You wouldn't have made much company, otherwise we'd have been very quiet down here.
And thanks for being one of the pioneers as this was all starting to build.
Yes, thank you. But honestly, I genuinely feel like I'm standing on some really giant shoulders, and AATH is really where my affinity just grew. And people, I shouldn't name names because then people will say, why didn't she mention me? I've mentioned in my new book, The Laughter Effect, I've highlighted, I think, about 5 or 6 AATH members and the wonderful work that they've been doing. And I think that, yeah, it's just such a gift to be part of a community of people that really do want to make the world a better place, make the world a more joyful place. And for that, I am just super grateful to be part of the movement, really.
All right. So do you have any future projects, or I should say any projects that you're playing now? The
wonderful thing is that, so I wrote The Laughter Effect, and I thought it was a good idea at the time, but it turns out that it seems to be quite a popular choice internationally. I've got 9, it's going to be translated into 9 different languages. Wow. So yes, thank you. So the States and Canada, the release is on the 19th of March. I think just last week it's been released in Portuguese. So it just depends. With each release, there will be projects and activities. In terms of my next big thing, it tends to change. I definitely want to do more writing. Definitely want to do that. And potentially a PhD, but not necessarily sure about it. And just to just see where it goes. I'm just going to go just wherever the energy goes, I will flow. Or I will flow where it goes, or whatever, something like that.
Yeah, it's perfect. Jim Bob has a question that he asks every single person. Jim Bob?
Yep. All right. So the question is this. Okay. For people who've read your book, have been through some of your workshops, what do you want them to remember on Thursday? And by Thursday, it's any given day of the week where you get just your typical weekday, workday problems. What should they know? What wisdom would you give them?
It's a great question.
I'll phrase it differently. How can humor make a difference on Thursday? How can laughter and humor make a difference on Thursday?
Laughter and humor can make a difference on any day. And I think that's the message, really, is that this is an everyday habit. This is an everyday practice. This is an everyday strategy and technique. And there's different ways in which we can do that. So it's as much of a sort of mind-body practice as a body-mind practice. So if on a Thursday your boss has just lost it with you and you're feeling really stressed, you're probably not going to be relying on humor to naturally kick in because you're not in the mood for laughing. So if Thursday is a particularly stressful day, you might want to build in an interval of just some intentional smiling. Or on your way home, or even if you're working from home, just take a 5-minute laughter break. Just tune into a funny podcast, listen to some jokes, search up some memes, just build on that humor and laughter and smiling potential. And if Thursday is a really great day, don't keep it to yourself. Share that joy. Share the smiling with a colleague. Share the joke. Share the laughter. So it's really, Thursday's a great day.
Oh, great. Now I'm looking forward to Thursday.
And this is the thing, that one of the reasons why I wanted to write a book as opposed to just do laughter coaching is that I want this to ripple out. It's evidence-based. It works. Yeah. It's slightly different, but it taps into neuroscience, mindfulness, health promotion, positive psychology, gelatology. So, and I think that once people understand that there's actually scientific rigor, it almost gives people this actually makes sense. It's now I feel more comfortable actually doing this sort of stuff. So it's interesting. I was approached by the Australian Broadcasting Commission. They were going to be doing a documentary about laughter and play, but it's been shelved for the moment. But I don't know. But this, I believe, is the next frontier. I think it's, and people are much more visual now, and they want short things. As I say, if only my husband would make one, but he dabbles in the dark side.
But I want to agree with you, Roz, that we are on the precipice of major change. These doors are opening, and the World Happiness Foundation is talking a lot about laughter, but also cities, communities, countries, and schools all working toward more well-being using all of these modalities.
Yes.
And it's growing exponentially, I think. Yes. And as I wander around and offer laughter moments and things for people, that once people hear that it's more potent than aspirin, and that the benefits are so grand from laughter, and people that are religious are interested in the Bible part of it, and other people are interested in the Zen part of it, and laughing Buddha, and there is so much depth to this that I think it's really being discovered now and shared.
Yes, all I can say is that in the book, I go through the history of laughter. I talk about how we laugh and smile to thrive from our inception. It's an innate resource. And then I've got the research, et cetera, et cetera. And definitely people are crying out for more laughter. Otherwise, they wouldn't have decided to get the rights to the book, sort of thing. Because I think that we're left with a lot of dissatisfaction. There's a lot of loneliness, disconnection. There's just so many problems that just seem too big to solve. So we have to come back to ourselves and what we can do and how we can change just moment by moment, person to person, and get that message rippling out. And there's always going to be, as Mary Kay would say, the doomer. There's always going to be humor doomers. You doing what you're doing, and it's like mindfulness is so yesterday. It's like people are ready for the next thing, and with so much tumult in the world and negativity and darkness, there's actually a need for joy. It's just as simple as that. It's just a need for joy. And we cannot be passive about it, and we can't rely on what may have worked before, because the world keeps changing. Oh, yes, that's lovely. Yeah, it's a really interesting and important space that we're all working in.
Yeah, and I'm just going to do a quick little plug, but I'm a professional clown and a laughter yogi that's got shut down during COVID 3 times. I was very aware of what was happening in Australia.
There's been all this focus for all these years about depression, and it's what you place your attention on, that's what grows. The more we can focus our attention on joy, levity, humor, laughter, gratitude, self-compassion, that's what grows. And that's what, it's contagious. Negative energy and not positive energy, it's all contagious. It's like you walk into a room of people who are stressed out. It's like it affects you. It's like you walk into a room where there's a presence of joy, it affects you. But what we're all doing is, as I say, we're not leaving these feel-good emotions to chance. And we're using them in a very real and therapeutic way that will change lives, as I say, by doing it, by practicing it. And then first you practice and then you become.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, you're going to have that at the conference, right?
Yeah.
Roz, how do we find you? How do people find you? How do you want to be contacted?
They go to an airport and they fly to Melbourne.
Okay.
But I don't want to do that. There's this thing called the internet.
Wow.
I know, right? So I've kept it simple. It's just my name, rosbenmosher.com, something like that. They can search the laughter effect. They can put my name in Google. And the great thing is that they'll find lots of free resources other than my books, which you have to pay for. But there are loads of free resources because I believe in making this stuff as accessible as possible to as many people as possible. So, yes.
Fabulous.
This has been Laughbox, the official podcast of the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor. I'm Jim Bob Williams.
And I'm Katie B.
And we'd like to thank Rosbin Moshe for being our guest today and telling us a little more about being a positive force for wellness and laughter in the community. Thank
Yay!
You.
Yay! Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you both. It's been a joy.
Thank you for joining us for episode 123 with Jim Bob Williams, Katie B, and Roz Ben-Mache. Thank you very much.
Laughbox is a production of the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor. Visit us online at www.aath.org. Follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Music by Gary Rubio. For more information, www.garyrubiomusic.com.